So I would say that a major pillar, not just of Netanyahu, but really going back to the early 90s in Israel, has been to empower their venture capital ecosystem. And it began with state backing really significantly in the early 90s. But Netanyahu, throughout his lengthy time as prime minister, has made that a major priority. And back in 2012, it actually became Israeli policy to have basically some of these startups that are incubated by veterans of Unit 8200 and some of these other Israeli intelligence agencies that involve technology to a significant degree, to have them conduct operations that were previously done in-house by Mossad or Unit 8200. So basically, to use them as fronts is essentially what the policy, admitted policy, began. And in the Israeli media report that documents this, they note that a firm like Black Cube, for example, which has been called a privatized Mossad, was one of the companies that was developed under this policy. But presumably there's a lot of other companies that also operate this way. And it's important to note that in the same period of time, you had a neoconservative and Zionist mega donor to the GOP, Paul Singer, team up with people from Netanyahu's office to develop something called Startup Nation Central, which was framed as a way to prevent the United States from ever meaningfully adopting the Boycott, Divest, Sanctions movement, or BDS, by basically marketing Israeli startups, particularly in technology, to American companies and also to the U.S. government. And of course, the U.S. government contracts with significant Unit to 8200 companies. For example, the NSA in the mid-2000s had an Israeli Unit 8200 linked company develop its back doors into popular software programs. I mean, Carbon 911 that I brought up earlier, also Unit 8200 created and now controlling a litany of 911 emergency call centers throughout the U.S. There's a lot of companies that have popped up to do so. And also, you've seen a lot of these Silicon Valley giants, Google, Microsoft, Intel, recruit heavily from Unit 8200 and also open, offices in Israel. Though, of course, some of those, in the case of Microsoft, significantly precede this 2012 point. But basically, the goal was to prevent the U.S. from ever adopt, boycott, or allowing boycotts of Israel at any meaningful level by integrating companies at the same time that Netanyahu made it a deliberate policy to use a lot of these companies as fronts for either the Israeli military or for Israeli intelligence. Unfortunately, in addition to that, we also have, a significant overlap of some of these Silicon Valley billionaires and the IDF rather overtly. So Larry Ellison, who I brought up a moment ago, is, I believe, if not the leading donor, one of the most major private donors to the IDF, and is also, as we noted a moment ago, a major contractor to the U.S. national security state, and is, building a quite a massive, U.S. domestic media empire. And I believe he's going to be one of the figures involved in the takeover of TikTok that was just signed off on by Trump not that long ago.
And he's just taken CBS.
Yeah, and I think Paramount, and I think a few others are. I think CNN is about to be acquired by them as well, so we'll see. But it's definitely a rapid consolidation. Us, and there's an unprecedented effort, of course, to propagandize the American people to have us willingly walk in and support and consent to these systems being installed, because a lot of people forget. But the ban on propaganda being used domestically against Americans was lifted under the Obama administration, and now with all of this extreme media consolidation by the specific cabal of billionaires and oligarchs, the propaganda is already bad, I would argue, but is going to get even worse to get people to consent to these systems specifically. And I think a lot of what we're going to see is going to be sort of a repeated trope of what we saw on the war on terror. We have to give up all of these new freedoms, or all of these freedoms and things like that, because we have to go after Al Qaeda and get them at all costs. But now, 20 plus years later, you have the head of Al Qaeda in Syria being given a diplomat, I don't even know what to call it. It's so ridiculous. Like a red carpet welcome to shake hands with David Petraeus and all of this. So we lost all of our freedoms. But now Al Qaeda is just, let's shake hands and let them come to the UN while we don't let anyone from Palestine come. I mean, it's totally insane. So I think it's quite possible that given that we're seeing this effort to gin up a war on domestic terrorism yet again, we're going to be given another invisible enemy and told that we need to give up all of these remaining freedoms and civil liberties to go after the domestic terrorists, and that it's going to be, unfortunately, a lot of the depravity that we witnessed during the war on terror, but directed domestically, hence the name domestic terrorism. And I think you can argue that was always the plan post 9/11. A lot of the stuff was focused domestically. Before 9/11, there were efforts to pass DHS as the National Homeland Security Agency. It stalled in Congress, of course, after 9/11, no longer stalled. And so DHS was created. In a lot of these, security agencies and the expansion of the national security state in general has also, had a lot of tentacles domestically. And I think Americans have been naive that a lot of the evil that national security security state has done abroad would never be used against them. And I think that, we need to be very aware of what is going on here, and that the deep state, whatever you want to call it, is expanding, and it's expanding in the hands of private oligarchs that have a very dangerous political vision that is rarely talked about. A lot of people on the right, for example, during the COVID era, were up in arms about the World Economic Forum and the public-private partnership stakeholder capitalist model, and some of the ideas promoted by its former chairman Klaus Schwab and the Fourth Industrial Revolution and transhumanism, but somehow are lining up behind these figures like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, who are also overtly transhumanist and have backed someone like Curtis Yarvin, who has a very similar political vision in many ways to Klaus Schwab. And somehow it's bad when one group does it, but not bad when the other, the other group backs it. And it's just, change a couple terms around and, try and make it edgy, but ultimately at the same day, it's it's essentially fascism. They obviously want to market it under different names to get people to consent to it, which I think is, efforts are being done to do that now under the guise of fighting the corruption in the national security state. But unfortunately, this has always been a cancer on American society that has been distinctly bipartisan. And I think a lot of what's going to be done here is it's going to be, if we allow it, political opposition could be labeled terrorism, quote unquote. And to think that this wouldn't come back on people on the right as well, I think is naive. The definition of domestic terrorist under the Biden administration concluded people that were outraged by perceived government overreach, for example, which could easily include people on the right as well. I mean, a lot of the things in the definitions of these things are incredibly vague and just meant, to sort of be a catch-all for people who don't agree with the government for whatever reason and who won't just put their head down and be obedient when prodded to do so. I think there's a potentially dark future, but there's still time for awareness about these agendas and for people to develop parallel systems to escape this. And I think it's very important too that people start really seriously considering how to wean themselves off of these Silicon Valley giants that are building these systems and contracting with these military and intelligence agencies, getting off of Microsoft or Google products. I mean, there's still time to do all of that. You can look up online different guides to use different operating systems, whether it's on your computer or your phone, or use alternatives to Google or any of these other things. If they may try and move to make it illegal to boycott Israel, but we can boycott the other enablers of the system that are based in the United States. And maybe it's inconvenient at the time to change these things, but I think it's much more inconvenient to just walk into this world that they're trying to usher us into without offering any sort of meaningful pushback. And if they're going to try and censor speech or criminalize speech, there's other things we can do to stop this from happening.